I do remark that I know a bit about, again, that I don't know anything about, so.
And the Village are the All-Ireland champions, 19 points to 14. Who said they couldn't win it?
Catherine, your own term as president of the Camogie Association, I was actually up in Ashbourne today. Your neighbours across the city were actually playing and got to the All-Ireland final. And there's no doubt Catherine, Camogie has reached incredible heights now. I'm sure this team in front of me here that won the final back whenever it was, back a number of years ago, were equally impressive. But Camogie as a sport has really come on in leaps and bounds. I thought the skill level today was just incredible.
Yeah, I think it's no more than all the work that's gone in over the years, not just here in Kilkenny, but all over the country and wider afield. You know, this club here, and even the players that have been produced over the years, both hurling and Camogie, it's really down to the club members, the volunteers, all the work that they put in, the coaching, the training from under 10. And when I look around at the players that are from this club that have and continue to represent the club at county level, it's a tribute to all those players and to this club itself.
And the way Camogie has grown, and you were very much responsible for that around the whole country. You know, we're seeing clubs, I see Cross Glenmore even playing in the Camogie semi-final today. So Camogie has grown enormously thanks to your work and your successors.
Well, I think we all stand on the shoulders of the ground before us, so myself more than anybody else. And, you know, we build and we have to offer something each time that we take a role, whatever that role is. And certainly the one thing that I would be very proud of is the fact that I come from this club. I come from a hurling football club. And, you know, we were always very proud to represent our county. And Camogie actually is played in far more places in Ireland than in hurling is. So we'll take the credit for that one.
I think that's a fair point. But, Fan, hasn't it been impressive the way Camogie has grown as a sport and the skill level? I mean, obviously, we had brilliant skill over the years. I'm just remembering the Downies and many more, of course. But the skill level now is just incredible.
It is brilliant now. That's all you have to say. You go look at the three city teams, not to go outside the country or the county, we say, which are brilliant. But the three city clubs, the Borough now are flying. Loughlin's have a great Camogie team. We have a great Camogie club. At underage, at under 7, under 10, the whole way up. And it is their driving it. And it's the lads over it. Jimmy O'Brien here, he brought it on, started it in. Brian Lahey, Philly, Chuck, and John Scott and the boys, they're driving it now. And it's all work at the heel of dawn, you know.
And are clubs a lot better now that they're embracing all the Camogie and ladies football, whatever it might be? And we're a far better association for that. I know there's a bigger picture coming on about the whole integration. We'll talk to Catherine about that in a moment. But the clubs are all the better for this.
Oh, without a doubt. It's great. You go to any night to our field that the Camogie team is training, and we have 5 pitches out there, and it's full with all girls from under 9 to under onto junior to senior. They're hurling the whole time, you know.
And it gets a lot more parents involved as well.
Oh, yes, it'll bring the parents and it'll make the club stronger, because it's not like when I was growing up, you had the Village, you had one street, we say. But now there's people coming into Kilkenny from the three clubs that nowhere near Kilkenny people, but they're all embracing it because all their kids and children are playing with their clubs in the city.
Now, Catherine, the whole integration process in Camogie and the GA, what's your hope out of that process? Because it's a bit in the public limelight, but I think there's a number of bumps on the road to be overcome yet.
Well, I suppose there's never anything without some bumps in the road. That's what makes it all special, and that's what makes, when you actually achieve it, makes it equally special. I think what my view is that what we see is an association, whatever that looks like, that actually is equal, and everybody is equal in it, no matter who they are, what they are, where they come from, and everybody gets the opportunity to be part of that, because we're very much about community, and if we're saying that we're about community, then we have to evidence that in the association that ultimately gets created out of it. And in some ways, if you look around the room here tonight, there's a mix of people from everywhere. You know, it doesn't matter whether they're part of the GA club or the Camogie club, because now we're all the one club. So hopefully we'll be able to take example at a national level and look around and see that, you know, it does work on the ground. We just have to work that little bit harder just to make sure that it actually is an equal organisation and that everybody feels part of that.
It has to be said that clubs, and James Stevens are one such club, they have led the way in how to work that whole unity and have respect for each other.
Oh yeah, I think like that. It, you know, that it's not just that it's about just that the GAA giving and, you know, and that it's all one sided. I think it has to be about that actually. It's from everybody and all the three organisations coming together. And more than any family, you know, there'll be rows and there'll be bumps in the road along the way. But eventually, we all sit under the same table and have our dinner or our tea. So that's what we want to get to at a national level.
Yeah, when you were playing yourself, Fan, in your earlier days, was there much camogie around, and was it a kind of happening unknowns to people?
There was very camogie in the village at that time. The team was, we say, and Downey and them, they had St. Paul's, and they had the cream of the crop, and they won everything was to be won. But it's only since the Brash, when I was finishing, we say, that we started a camogie team. Jimmy O'Brien started a camogie team here, and it was a camogie years ago, but Jimmy O'Brien is the last starter. And what really happened is a lot of the boys got married and they all had daughters. And that's where it started, you know?
I think that's very well said. But nowadays, camogie gets great coverage on television and like that, and that's not before its time as well.
Oh, rightly so. Rightly so. What was in Croke Park this year at that camogie final? I think there were 30,000. Yeah. You know, that's great, you know. And what really helped me now, they're playing some camogie matches before senior hurling matches, you know.
And Catherine, one of the challenges is for maybe country teams, is to get access to more pitches. And I'm afraid people higher up the food chain than us in government and that, they have to recognise that this needs help.
Yeah, before I answer that, I'd just like to make one mention of Anne Power, because Anne Power was very pivotal in the founding and the Camogie Club here in the club. So I'd just like to make special mention of Anne. I'm not sure if she's here tonight, but I know Angela is here. But yeah, I do think that, you know, it's a bit like everything that, you know, the government, you know, whatever government or whatever shade of government it is, that there is a requirement and there is a need for funding. And we all understand that funding is limited. But when you look at what the sports and the Gaelic Games family contributes to our communities, I think it's a strong investment. It's a good investment, and it's an investment in the future of the country. So I would certainly be seeking that, you know, that we would see the, you know, government support the whole integration and to assist in some of those areas where funding is the answer to some of the problems that are there.
And finally, from your perspective, Catherine, what's your integration aside, what's your hopes for the game going forward?
Well, hopefully I won't be alive to see it, but in 250 years' time that we still see hurling, camogie, Gaelic football all being played, and it's still the number one sport, not just in this country, but across the world.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, we might leave it at that. I want to thank Catherine, who was a great president of the Camogie Association, and Fan. Thanks very much. It's a great honour to be talking to these two gentlemen here. Jim, I give you, because you're really this very special guest on the night. When you arrived in Kilkenny first, and when you started getting involved in the football, what were your hopes and aspirations? Because coming into Kilkenny, we have a reputation, as the great Paddy Grace would have said, the best thing to do with a football is often to take out the penknife.
Take out the penknife. Well, when I came to the club here first, there were always great hurlers around the place here. You'd see men with immense skill. And there's no doubt, if you've immense skill playing hurling, you can switch it over to the football, because you're a natural athlete. And I could see this, and I used to ask, I was appointed at one stage to be the manager of the team, and I used to ask Brian Cody, he'd be out there training the senior team, and I'd say, Brian, would you ever cut it short, maybe by 20 minutes? I could throw in a couple of footballs.
And what did he say?
And it was never greeted with much glee, let's say. But eventually we got... And then the lads had a bit of a bad run in the hurling championship. So there was a lot of lads hanging around and nothing to do. And basically I said, look, why wouldn't we go at the football? And I have to say, one man in this club, regarding football, like, I'm getting a lot of praise here tonight, but Mick Moore, he's one man that had great influence on the football. Mick organised tournaments here, and we bought trophies. We ran a great tournament here over the weekend, and various clubs from Mullinahone and other parts of the county, and we came up and... We had the final on a Sunday evening. And who had we in the final? Only Railyard. And we, let's face it, the final was a fairly tenacious affair, but we eventually got over that and we had trophies now and we had a wonderful day. And but we got it going then and was leagues, various leagues going. But I want to just say, the first year that I was pointed, somebody said, would you take over with the football, lads? And I said, I know, I'd leave that to some of the lads, because it used to be always a dual job. If you're senior hurling manager, you kind of threw it in with football as well. But it was only a kind of a haphazard job. And I looked at this and I said, that's, but anyhow, 91, they appointed me as manager. And I always remember that when I went, the selectors the first year was Jimmy O'Brien and Mick Nary. And I used to always remember people straggling up here to the club wants to play half-heartedly, because they'd turn around and say, oh, I just was here and there was no transport. So I used to kind of say, well, look, I'll be the last one that'll leave the club. I always reckon it could be the last one. Someone might strangle it up and there's no excuse. So anyhow, the man that arrived up, would you believe, out of the blue, was my great old friend, Christy Lahey. Christy came up and said, oh, Jimmy, go out to the match. And I had my son Barry with me. And we went on our way to Thomastown. So anyhow, I was late going out. Jimmy and Mick were outside waiting for me. And next, I put the boot down. And I was going, and next, Christy says, well, look, if you're going to drive like that, stop the car and get out. Like, unbelievable for, like, Christy was a man that would jump up on a bicycle and ride it down to Tremor, turn around and come back at about 80 miles an hour. But with car, he couldn't stick. But anyhow, I had to slow it down a few times going out, and here I was, dog late. Anyhow, arrived, Jimmy and Mick are standing around the bonnet of a car, and no team picked, nothing at all. And next, we had a look at this, and I said, this is my first game now in 91, first game. And I said, now, lads, what I hope to do is I'll put Liam O'Connor down at number 6 and we'll build the team around that. And Mick says, now, Mick is a great football man and he knew his stuff. And Mick says, who's Liam O'Connor? And I said, Mick, he joined the club a couple of months ago and he's a Waterford hurler, Waterford footballer. He won a Railway Cup medal with Munster. He's a very good footballer, from what I can hear. So I didn't see him playing either, but I'm going with that. Well, says Mick, I'll tell you one thing, he says. I'm not picking anyone that I never saw playing. So Chuck was given the number 17 shirt. Went without and we played Glenmore in Thomastown and we got beat. We were beaten anyhow. But anyhow, to make a long story short, we lost a few matches, but we began to gain momentum. And this was it. And the one thing I could find from players, I never minded we'd win, lose or draw. When you put out 20 lads there to play a match, 5 subs, if they give you everything, that'll drive you back again. And we drove it on and we got to the final. Played Rail Yard in the first year and we won. 1-9 to 1-7. And the lad that was a sub the first day scored 1-6 out of 1-9. And Mick Nary Fairchus told me, come out in the middle of the field. And he shook Liam's hand and he says, you know what? You were certainly man of the match there today. But we went on along with that. There was a photograph there. The lads showed me a photograph there with myself with 2 footballs. Now, we were never that flahoolock in this club with footballs. But we always had at least 2. Coming home. At least coming home. If not 3 coming home at times. If the boys had their way, but anyhow, or 4 if I had my way. So we had played. But anyhow, this day we were going off to play we're after winning the championship. Our playing Carnew, a good team from Wicklow, they'd won the Wicklow championship. So we're picked. Oh yeah, Sean Dyer's team from there. Yeah. This is not a cut of you, Sean. But anyhow, we went down anyhow, and we're supposed to be going to Aucrum. But of course, at that time of the year, we got this phone call. Oh, it's not in Aucrum. You'll have to go to Arklow. So off we travelled, got to Arklow eventually, Sunday evening. And we going in the gate, and there was three Arklow guys standing at the gate letting us in. And we marched in just with bags in the back, and the boys said, oh, Jez, do you want a couple of footballs, lads? Because I know you don't have any up there in Kilkenny. And we said, and you know what? That was the worst thing they ever said to us that day. We used that in the dressing room. They had a sneer at us. They said, we'd no footballs. We'll go out and show. And you know what? The village, they put on a display that day. I won't mention names. We won it. We beat Carnew. So anyhow, we're coming out the gate. And the three boys were still standing there waiting for the Arklow ground to be emptied. And they were standing there. And one of the lads said to him, oh, I'd never know what would have happened if we did have a football.
Jim, I'll give you a chance to catch your breath there. Because you were in full flow. Well, our... Sean Byland is a man I've known. We've been very close over the years. But Sean, your introduction to the inter-county scene, you really were a hurling man at heart, weren't you?
I am, Nicky. Yeah, I always was.
So tell us how it came about that you got on to the to take on this meet football job.
I played hurling from 1961 until I was 30. I was 17 at the time, and I played until I was 38. And I always said, I wonder what I'll do when this is over. So my last year, I was player manager of the Hurlers, and we did well. Then the county secretary rang me to know what...
Liam Craven.
Liam Craven, yeah. And I thought he was talking about the hurling team. He said, the football team. I said, hang on, Liam, now. I said, John, well, are you going to take it? I said, Liam, give me a while. So I spoke to another friend of yours, Brian Smith. Anyhow, I said, I'll take it for a few months until you get somebody. And that was the way it was.
And the rest is history. Tell us about the days out in Dalgan Park when you had all the training. And how did you build up that? Because you had big, strong, hardy bucks of men on that team who wouldn't stand back from anybody.
I think Brendan Lee injected them or something. You know what I mean? Some of the lads.
Yeah, Brendan Lee, we think, had a part to play here. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, jeez. Jerry McIntyre and Kieran O'Rourke, Colin's brothers. What, you wouldn't expect him to be any other way after getting a shot there from Brendan. You know what I mean? And like, Mac always needed something to keep him going. You know what I mean? No, listen, lads.
What did you get up to in those training sessions out in Dalgan Park? Because it was, they were notorious.
I suppose the thing we realised more than anything else was that you could go around with self-pity all your life. Or as you can take on the mantle, you can have a go at it, have a cut at it. And you had a crowd of lads with you that they were incredibly strong physically, naturally. With regard to agility and things like that, we had to do an awful lot of work with regard to all of that. But there was a bond from day one. And it changed everything for me was we got beaten by Laois in a Leinster semi-final 1985. We'd beaten 10 points. And suddenly, the lads who had won the Centenary Cup the previous year, they're only a crowd of old women, not able to play football, and so on. And so what do you expect? A man is a hurler. Worse still, he probably gave him some of the bottles that he has at home. So everything was getting fairly good and personal, and that's the way you wanted it, right? So make a long story short, I just thought about it a lot. Went in home one evening. I always lived at home with my mother and father, God be good to them. And my mother was still alive. And in the sitting room was Jerry McIntyre, in the kitchen, I should say, Joe Cassis, Colm O'Rourke, Liam Hayes, Paul Glines and Mick Lines. And the lads were drinking tea and eating brown bread and jam, and you wouldn't see them with my mother smoking. And after a few minutes, Mammy said, and she'd never had a match in her life. She never had a training session in her life. And she said, up the house now, you crowd, and sort it out. And we went up and we talked about where we come from, and I wasn't sure whether I could go any further with them or was any good to go any further. And Paul Glines said, will you put your shyness in your arse pocket? I said, Paul, are you serious? He said, I am. And from then on, the chairs went round the circle. Anything we had to say, we said it there. Nearly every time we went out, the windscreen was clear. You never heard back from the up and down because everybody had an opportunity to say what they needed to say. We had good days and we had bad days, but one thing we're certain, we weren't going to stop without bringing back a Leinster, and we weren't going to stop without bringing back an All-Ireland, and that's the way it started, and it just went on from there.
And when you won your first All-Ireland, that obviously was the culmination of all the effort and planning and strategising that you had done.
Ah, yeah, and a lot of the people who had gone before us and so on, but it was more when people suddenly decided, and Jim found that, when the lads want to do something, but no matter what it was, there was no excuses. There was no need for an excuse. There was no need. I actually never drank in my life. I never had to say to a lad, go easy on the jar, whatever it was. Just people started taking the responsibility themselves. And no matter what you're doing in life, if you start blaming others, you're in big trouble. Just be ready. Take whatever comes with it, take it yourself. And that's what they did, Nicky.
But in fairness, Sean, you had great leaders on that team. And that probably was a big help to you because they were able to take on responsibility.
Well, Colin would have said years ago, Rorke, well, if we have him around long enough, we'll make a manager out of him. You know what I mean? But look, we had great leaders. Let it be from Mick Lyons right down the middle, Joe Castles, Liam Hayes, Jerry McAtee. Like, I remember Jerry, as you talk about the sacrifice people make to play. Our very first championship match was against Dublin 1983. And it was a draw match. And normally the replay would have been in Navan, and I asked the county board, would they mind if we played it in Croke Park? I said, I want to get the lads used to going into Croke Park, and I think they're going to be in here a lot. And he said, the county board, Fintan Giddy, said, yeah, go ahead. So we had the replay, and Jerry McAtee came in that morning. He was the only player I ever had that got a cramp, and the reason he got the cramp was because the match went extra time. It was still a draw at extra, at full time. And Jerry had been on the go for, you know, the previous day and the day and a half, he had done a liver transplant in Tyneside in Newcastle. And when he finished, he got in the plane, Scopes White picked him up at the airport, he had snacks and he had so on. And when it came to the extra time, he had nothing left in the tank. Was there any excuse? No excuse. 1990, beaten in the All-Ireland final by Cork. And he stretches out for a ball. Shea Fahey comes across, saw his opportunity. Jerry pulled the groin. And when the match was over, there was a plane where the Croke Park Hotel is now. There was a helicopter, Jim Ronay's garage, to take him out to the airport. We had a plane to fly him to London. And at 7 o'clock in the evening, he's on a flight back to Rochdale, the most famous clinic in the world, the Mayo Clinic. And he had to stand the whole way, walk around the whole way. He wasn't able to sit down, but he had to be back at work the next day. In other words, when he was working, he was working. When he was playing football, he was playing football. No one ever made an excuse. They just, whatever you wanted to do or whatever needed to be done, that's the way it was, and everybody took the responsibility.
Yeah, well, that was obviously, from your perspective, the rest of the players saw what was going on.
Yeah.
So that was the message that was going to them as well. You didn't really have to say anything.
No it was Jimmy McGuinness was on the late late one night. He was on with Ryan Tubridy, and he was talking about the sacrifices that lads are making today. And I rang Brian the next day, Brian Cody. And we talked about the sacrifices. Like, if you're, this is the game you want to play on. You know what I mean? You want to play hurling, you want to play football. Well, there's no apologies for it. This is what we do. This is who we are. And after I was finished with Brian, I rang Dr. Con below in Cork. And I said, did your father ever do weights? Now, lads, for those who don't know, Con Murphy's father was the famous Weeshie Murphy. And Weeshie Murphy has half a dozen All-Ireland medals. And he says, Sean, he says, when my father was playing for Cork in an All-Ireland semi-final, he'd pull out the boat. We lived on the island, Castletown Bear. He lived on Bear Island, 3/4 of an hour to row to the mainland, 16 miles of a cycle to Bantry, a car to pick him up from Bantry to bring him up to Kent Station in Cork, up, get your breakfast on the train, play the match. On your way back down, you got your dinner. You get off the train, taxi to Bantry, 16 miles of a cycle, put the boat back in the water, row back home. And why I'm saying that is because this is what people want to do. And like, that's what I'm saying to you about, don't talk about the sacrifices that you're making, because look at, everybody in life, you know, when you look at what goes on in the world, to be able to play football, to be able to play hurling, there's nothing like it. There is nothing like it.
Yes. Absolutely. We'll be back to Sean in a minute, because I do want to talk to him about his time with the international rule. Jim, I mean, in terms of this club really achieved an awful lot during your time. But like Sean Boylan, you had a lot of respect from the players in the club, and that's how you managed. But I'm keen to know, who were the big rivals of the time? You mentioned the Rail Yard. Anybody else?
Oh, well, the Rail Yard. Well, let's, for number one, I'd say we had a hell of a team here, Nicky. This, I would say, the teams that won the championship here were as good as any team that ever played in Kilkenny. We had magnificent players. Now, the main rivals were Rail Yard, and we had Dixbury, of course, Glenmore, they were, and Muckalee, yes, were strong contenders as well. And Mullan of Ash, they came in as well. But to be honest, it was always Rail Yard nearly ended up between the two of us. And Kieran, the late, great Kieran Mealy, was a great friend of mine. And Kieran used to call down to my house at times, and we discussed nothing but football, of course. And Kieran would say to me, we might be playing, say, in a fortnight's time, the county final. And Kieran would say, look, Jim, if you see me before the match, during the match, look away. Say nothing to me. Because he said, I don't know what I might say to you. I will regret it. Because I'm just concentrated on the game. And we had some hell tussles with Rail Yard. Twice we drew with them in a county final. And we, thanks be to God, we got the better of them every time in the replay. Some magnificent performances in the replay. So there were magnificent times. Whereas Sean already had said, once you're getting it out of the players, that's the main job. Players, that once they were dedicated to it, would go training, etc. That was the pleasure, the greatest pleasure of all. So,
Jim, you created great friendships here, and that was important to you because the sport was important. But coming into a city like Kilkenny, you created great friendships which live to this day, as we see here tonight.
Yes, I've great friends there. Maybe they're all going to buy me a pint before this night's over. But great friends there. And the way I used to operate was I used to talk to the boys on an individual basis. I didn't go into the dressing room and talk a load of mush to 30 lads in the dressing room. But I worked on an individuality job. And so I got to know the players very well and made huge friendships with, as you can see, all these lads here tonight are really great friends of mine, without a doubt.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jim. I do want to ask Sean, because when you become president of the GAA, one of the things that you have to do is appoint an international team manager for the International Rules Series, and I asked Sean to be that manager. Now, the first series was played in Ireland, and there was tensions over in Galway. Graham Geraghty got into a little bit of bother, but then, Sean, all hell broke loose in Croke Park. You were fairly angry after that match.
Yeah, it's only twice in my life I ever lost a head in the line. And Kevin Sheedy and Jim Stein's got to be good to him. I met them on the Friday before we played that match. And there were things we talked about that shouldn't happen, we don't want to happen. And 11 rows were orchestrated before the match started, and all hell broke out. And there's 82,000 people there. And I walked down to the two lads, and I just said, lads, you've made a balls of it, and we'll never be forgiven. And I won't tell you what they told me to do, but that was all right. And the other time was, we played Kerry one day, and we bet them 15 points to not out of the semi-final. And the lads started showing off, and I hated that. And people were being a bit disrespectful to Kerry people. And you can't do that. And because it's sport to sport at the end of the day. But thankfully, Nicky, and I wouldn't have had the job only for you, gave me a chance 2 years later in Australia, and they won the series. But lads, can I just explain something to you? Talk about men making decisions. My very first meeting, when Nicky rang me, I thought it was a wind-up. I really did. I wouldn't believe him. And he came out the house and said, will you come into a meeting tomorrow with Liam and myself, Liam Mulvihill? And he said, I said, I'd love to do it, but there's something I need to do, because the 95 series have been terrible in Australia, and the Gooch and a whole lot of lads got really badly broken up. And I said, I want them to feel like an international team. And I said, I really want them to, you know, experience what it's really like and what it should be like. And you said to me, what do you want to do? I said, I'm not a bit afraid the Australians tackling us, but I'm really afraid of our lads going into the tackle against them. Because if you don't know how to do it, you're just going to get injured all over the place. I said, I'd like to take them on a training camp. And Liam and yourself asked me where, and I said, Toulouse. And you said to me, do you know anybody there? I said, no. Could you talk to somebody out there? I said, I can. And you said, okay. And I went out and I met the people in Toulouse. They were at the time, like the way sort of Leinster had been in you know, sort of for the last number of years. And they welcomed the GA with open arms. And there were internationals from 8 different countries. And they all came and they trained with us. And it was a great experience. And one of the men that was there was a chap called Gareth Thomas. And Gareth Thomas was the first Welshman to get 100 caps. And he came to the training session as well. Now, it'll show you what people will do to give your lads a chance. There were 3 players. One was in Cork, one was in Dingle, and the other one was in Derry. And they couldn't get back down in time because they wouldn't be released from work. And 3 people were rang, and a helicopter left St. Colman's in Derry, one left Cork, and one left Dingle. And the 3 lads made the flight. And that's what turned everything round. And Gareth Thomas spoke to us that night, and I asked him the question, what's it like to get picked for Wales? And he said, Sean, he said, I'll tell you what it was like playing for Bridgend, my club. He said, my father, and he said, my grandfather, they were miners, and they worked down the collieries, and they were about 1.5 miles down, and there was a ventilation system, not an air conditioning, and they came up out of the pits, and they played rugby to clear their lungs. And then he said, I get picked to play for Bridgend. Then I get picked to play for Wales. And you're given the jersey to bring home. And he said, I went home. I went into my room upstairs. I put on the jersey. I took it off, put on again. And there were buttons on the jerseys at the time. And I had hair at the time and I did my hair. And he said, I looked in the mirror. And I could see my father and I could see my grandfather. And only for them, I would not be where I am and the chances that they gave me. And he said, from then on, every training session I ever did, every match I ever played, I looked in the mirror for a minute and I looked and I saw Gareth Thomas and nobody else, and I could be nobody else. And I had to bring honour to whatever I did. And he said, that stood to me all my life. Now he said, no matter where I go, I can always know that I gave of my best. And I'm thankful to those that have gone before me and the chances that they gave me. And we're the very same in what you're talking about here tonight. Because without the club, you're absolutely nowhere. And 2 years, but when we went out to train, the internationals came from everywhere. They came to train with the lads. They knew all about Gaelic football. They knew far more about it than we could have ever thought that they would. And it was an amazing opportunity. And then 2 years later, when we went out to Australia and won the series, and won it by 2 points, and the football that was played was the way it should be played. And when you walk into a place like you go to Subiaco in Perth, and a chap called Jerry Hart, who 40 years ago had left Dunboyne, or you go down to the MCG or whatever it is, and a chap called Carl Peterson came over to me, and he was with the Australian cricket team. And he made a presentation to me of a jersey because, you know, the GPSs that lads wear today, what we did the previous year was we went to the University of Ottawa and we got one of the lads, Carl Peterson, came over. We gave him a contract for a year. And the amount of injuries that were prevented by having the right things. And suddenly it was bringing our games were as important as that. And no matter where you went, there were hundreds playing. They all wanted to play the games and so on. And it was powerful. And we had some crack and we had some great times. And thank you.
Yeah. Finally, Sean, and, you know, I think people have really been listening here tonight. You're now back in the backroom team with Colm O'Rourke. So tell me, these lads who like to place a bet around the room here, what's the chances of meet? You won the Tailteann Cup, of course, earlier, just a few months ago. What about the coming year? And what are you enjoying being back involved again?
I thought Colm was mad when he came up to me. And when Colm asks you, he doesn't ask you. He just walks in and he walks around the room and he says, I want you to come down. I want you to come down to be in the dugout. I want you to go to the dressing rooms. I want you to talk to the players. I want you there. And I said, what about the age profile? Well, he said, you told me you weren't interested in birth certificates. And that's true. And be honest with you, I was a bit overawed. And honest to God, I'm loving it, to be honest with you. The lads are great. I think they'll do very well. I really think they'll do well. I think they have found something. And there's an indefinable thing that a crowd of lads come together. And I think the right man is there with them. And I'm honoured to be there with them.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Mulvan and Sean Byland.